Good morning, and thank you for joining us today. My name is Representative Emma Greenman, and I represent South Minneapolis in the Minnesota House. And I am really proud to be joined by my colleagues and Minnesotans who work across our economy, nurses, warehouse workers, farmers, grocery workers, Minnesotans who are urging us to take action to level the playing field for workers and for families in an economy that is tilted to benefit powerful corporations and wealthy special interests. And that's why we're here, to advance our agenda to unrig Minnesota's economy and put the market power back in the hands of Minnesotans. This is important and urgent work. In the last 30 years, over 75% of industries have grown more concentrated, and if that continues at the current rate, by 2070, there will just be one big corporation left. Corporate monopolies dominate a variety of industries and use their consolidated market power to raise prices, lower wages, offshore jobs, squeeze small businesses, and shrink from their responsibility to contribute to the common good. And in the last decade or so, it's only gotten worse. And we don't just see this in our economic data. We hear it from our constituents and our communities. They tell stories of being nickeled and dimed, often overcharged and underpaid at the cash register, at hospitals, online checkouts, on their paycheck, and pretty much everywhere else in our economy. Patients are being riddled with debt just to get the healthcare they need. Workers cheated out of overtime and unemployment insurance. And farmers whose share of the food dollar is now less than 15%, while the profits of the seed and feed and processing companies continue to soar. We have been listening to these stories. In the first year of the DFL trifecta, we passed a budget to help Minnesotans afford their lives. But while corporate power and profits soar, many working families still face the squeeze of industries that put profits over people. We made insulin affordable for all Minnesotans who need it, but the for-profit healthcare system still leaves too many Minnesotans drowning in medical debt and unable to get the care they need. We passed universal free school meals, and now every student in Minnesota can learn on a full stomach, but their parents still face inflated food prices driven by market consolidation and corporate greed. We passed legislation to ensure Minnesota families have earned safe and sick time, but some employers are cheating the system by misclassifying their workers to get out of providing that paid sick time and overtime pay. Across industries and geography, the economy is tilted in favor of wealthy and powerful corporate interests, and it's time for that to change. Our agenda to unrig Minnesota's economy is our first step to address the way some corporations use anti-competitive practices to raise costs, control workers, and squeeze farmers and small businesses. The legislation that my colleagues are here to talk about today and other proposals that DFLers are working on throughout this session, including the consumer protection package that's going to be heard in the Minnesota Senate later this week on Thursday, they're focused on structural reforms that promote fairness and competition in the marketplace, that protect Minnesota families, workers, and small businesses from abuse, and give market power and choice back to Minnesotans. With that, I'd like to turn it over to my colleague and co-author on the Junk Fees Bill, Senator Port.
Good morning, everyone. I'm Senator Lindsay Port. I represent District 55, which covers Burnsville and Savage. Think about the last time you bought something online. An airplane ticket, a hotel room, tickets to opening day for the Twins, or a new phone. Was the price that you saw next to the item even close to the price that you ended up paying? Think about the last time you went out to dinner or ordered food online. How many different fees were added before your total? Corporations in Minnesota are employing underhanded tactics to hike prices on families already struggling to meet basic needs. On average, Minnesota households spend over $3,000 annually on junk fees that artificially inflate prices without offering any tangible benefits. In a survey by North Star Prosperity, 85% of Minnesotans encountered these fees. And they're often hidden on the last web page before you check out or on the bottom of a receipt after you've eaten your meal, making them difficult to avoid and skewing the ability to comparison shop. I'm proud to be the Senate author of 7537, alongside Rep. Greenman with House File 3438, which requires disclosure of all fees and charges in the advertised and displayed price of any good or service. Our bill would provide consumers with a clear, upfront understanding of a product's total cost and discourage the use of hidden fees to undercut honest small businesses and exploit hardworking Minnesota families. Junk fees reward companies that deceive consumers, disguise the true cost of a good or service, and put honest businesses at a disadvantage. These hidden fees rip off consumers to pad the bottom line for corporate profits. Minnesotans deserve transparency in pricing. Our dollars are too precious not to know. And now I will turn it over to Representative Purcell.
Good morning. My name is Christy Purcell. I'm a former farmer and a current member of the Minnesota House representing District 58A, Northfield, Dundas, Lonsdale, New Prague, and the townships in between. During the 2023 legislative session, we passed an electronic fare repair bill that gives consumers the right to fix their iPhones and other devices, but we left out Minnesota farmers. New farm equipment is often just as much electronics as it is heavy machinery, and if farmers are unable to fix these pieces of equipment themselves or take it to a locally owned independent shop, these combines they've spent sometimes upwards of $1 million on might sit in a field, might be unable to complete the harvest, and perhaps miss the window to turn a profit for that entire season. We've seen corporate greed specifically target our rural communities over and over again. Today, Minnesota farmers have enough to worry about when multinational corporations are squeezing them from the input side and on the market side. Farmers deserve the freedom to operate their machinery and run their businesses as they choose, and not to wait on the companies they've already paid for their equipment from for continued access to basic services to drive and operate their machines if something as small as a sensor malfunctions. We cannot allow corporations to be making business decisions for our family farmers, and it's time to push back. Farm Action estimates a lack of federal right to repair protections cost American farmers and ranchers as much as $4.2 billion a year and wants the Federal Trade Commission to take action under existing antitrust law. But we don't have to wait for federal regulation, and we can help our farmers now by passing this legislation. That's a priority for my constituents and for the farmers who work the land across Minnesota. Next up, Senator Liz Bolden.
Good morning. I'm Senator Liz Bolden. I represent District 25, which is Rochester and surrounding areas. Most Minnesotans work hard and play by the rules. Those who owe a debt should pay, but the system should be fair and dignified, and the process of paying a debt, people shouldn't be harassed, exploited, or dragged into poverty. I'm very excited to be the Senate author of Senate File 4065, or the Debt Fairness Act. It's a package bill that contains a lot of policy in three main categories: debt collection, garnishments, and medical debt. Today, I'm going to focus on the section around medical debt because it is hugely important to me, and it is highly connected to nearly every Minnesotan. If you don't personally have a story and experience with medical debt, I'm betting that you know someone who does. Medical debt is unique. It's not like planning for a car loan or a mortgage. It's something where people don't have a choice. It comes from an illness or an accident or a diagnosis. Everyone deserves the care they need and to be able to focus on that care and healing. But so often, that is not the case because the system is rigged so that insurance companies, corporate healthcare, and their millionaire CEOs are making billions of dollars off a system that is bankrupting Minnesotans. It's the stories of Minnesotans that I carry with me in this work. The mother who put tens of thousands of dollars of debt on a credit card because without paying, a hospital was denying care to her son who needed that care to save his eyesight. The widower who was forced into bankruptcy because upon his wife's passing, The huge bill for her cancer care was passed along to him. I'll note that we are one of only a few states who does this practice, and medical debt is the only debt that is transferred in that way. The family who's struggling to pay for groceries and childcare and rent because of the aggressive, coercive collection practices for a bill that originated from a coding error, thus care that wasn't even delivered. It doesn't have to be this way. We all deserve a healthcare system that is centered around care instead of profits, and unrigging this harmful system to protect Minnesotans is a step in that direction. With that, I will turn it over to Attorney General Keith Ellison.
Thank you, Senator. And may I just thank everybody here today, you know, those of you, ladies and gentlemen of the press, right here are people who are farmers, they're workers, they represent the people in our state who really make things happen, who put food on the table, who make sure products get where they're supposed to get. They make the economy happen. If they're not in this thing, nobody is. And so I just want to thank you for all that you guys do. Thank you all very much. Imagine with me, if you will, just walk with me for a minute, that you're a dairy farmer in Stearns County. It's not an easy time. The price of milk is at its lowest in a decade. And costs, well, they're climbing. You've got essential equipment that needs repairs, but the only shop you're authorized to use is hours away and comes with a big, hefty price tag. On top of that, many of your neighboring small farms are being vacuumed up into big conglomerates that threaten to crowd you out of the market. Or imagine that you're working in a mine in a small Iron Range town and you and your coworkers aren't getting a fair shake from the company that owns your mine. You want a better and you want safer conditions, but because they're the only business in town, you've got no real leverage to push back. Or imagine for a moment that you're just doing your weekly grocery shopping and because four companies control 90% of the grain trade, the cost of your basics just seems to keep going up when your dollar doesn't go nearly as far as it used to. This is the economy that we have right now. This is why you can hear all the claims of prosperity and things are getting better and the Dow Jones is doing this or that, but people are still struggling in this economy. Much of it is because over the last 40 years, we have seen a massive concentration in nearly every industry, from beer to meat to all kinds of meat, pork, beef, all kinds of meat, but also hotel rooms. I mean, you name it, and we have seen a massive consolidation in this economy. And it, quite honestly, it has been across both political parties. But it's time to put fairness and competition back up front. It's time to reclaim the Sherman Act, the FTC Act, the Clayton Act, all these antitrust bills that really said we're going to have a fair economy and everybody's going to have a shot at prosperity. That's what we're talking about. If we pass these bills, what you will see is greater prosperity for everybody. More product differentiation, lower prices, higher wages. That is what competition in gives to an economy. And when you monopolize, you just get the opposite. I want to talk about the Antitrust Modernization Act. Whether it's in agriculture or big tech or healthcare or anywhere in our economy, these anti-competitive strategies are always evolving. That's why we've got dramatically increased market concentration, and that's why the Attorney General's office has dramatically increased assistant attorney generals to fight for a fair competitive economy. And I want to thank our staff from that group that's here today. But the law just hasn't kept up with the changes in our economy. Minnesota's antitrust laws are over 50 years old. I think it's time for an update. I think it's time for us to change. Let me say, here's what we think we need, we believe this moment calls for. First, we need a state law to clearly define what we're up against. And that is what the Antitrust Modernization Act does. The Minnesota Antitrust Statute of 1971 finds abuse of monopoly power illegal, but does not define what that monopoly power is. That means judges have been left to decide what a monopoly means in the Minnesota economy, and that leads to uncertainty, and that's not good for business or consumers. Same goes for monopsony. What is monopsony? Well, that is when there's only one buyer. Buyer often of what? Labor. So if there's a one-shop town, they pay you what they feel like paying you. And that's not good either. So the bill sets a clear definition of what is monopoly power. And that is, the bill, here, let me tell you what this is as soon as my phone cooperates. My goodness. Monopoly power means, I was ready for this. I got the definition right here and it won't come up.
So we need to pass this bill.
So we got to pass this bill. But it's a simple definition, and it means monopoly power means when your position in the market allows you to raise prices, enforce prices, and to exclude people from the market, and to significantly decrease your competition and control the people who are in the market competing against you. It gives a literally four-sentence definition that a judge can apply. The bill also does something else that it must be updated. It gives meaningful consequences to violation of the law. Right now, the fines in our laws are nothing more than speed bumps. Lawbreakers pay the fine and keep speeding forward to more unfair, anti-competitive behavior. For them, the current fines are just the cost of doing business. This bill doubles the fines for individuals to perhaps as high as $100,000 per violation, depending on how bad it is. And the fines for companies go up to $1 million per violation, again, depending on how bad they are. My office will always go after these bad actors when they break the rules, but we want them to think twice before they do so. So I'm happy that this is a top priority this session, because antitrust is key to so many issues for our families. You might even say that why has the American economy stagnated for so many working people across the United States? And I would say at the bottom, it is the market concentration that has gone unabated for nearly 50 years now, and it's time to reintroduce the basic idea of competition. The basic idea that I'm talking about is we're going to stand tall for small business, for small farmers, for consumers, so that we can have a competitive, robust, dynamic economy. So thank you all very much, and I'll hand that to Senator Port or Greenman.
Yep. So with that, I think we can open it for a few questions.
I've been in those restaurants. I've got to the bottom of the bill, and I'm made to feel guilty, because usually they say this is going to some good work. We're going to cover our health costs for our employees, things like that. Do you not believe they're spending it on that, or do you just think it should be accounted for differently?
So I will start, and then I want to turn it over to my colleague, Senator Port. The way that I learned economics in high school and college is that the market works with price transparency and that you compare on price. So if you have labor costs or input costs, that's what the price is for. And so adding an additional fee at the bottom that isn't calculated into the price, that maybe comes late, is actually just a way to deceive people on what the price is. And so it doesn't matter. I mean, I think what matters is if their costs are going up, that's what prices are for. And so just the fundamental of sort of my college and high school economics is we need price transparency so that Minnesotans can actually make the choices they want to make.
Yeah, and I'll just add to that, that transparency piece is what is deceptive not only to consumers, but also to other businesses. If small businesses are raising their prices as those costs go up, as labor costs go up, and they don't have all of these deceptive practices, they are showing a higher price. If sort of these consolidated companies are then saving part of that price for the bottom of your receipt, they're able to offer what looks like a lower price to consumers and help crowd those small businesses out of the market, further consolidating power. They're still charging the same or even more at the end. They're just hiding it so that consumers don't have the ability to actually comparison shop.
How would this affect some of the restaurants that add in a 20% tip, for instance? Would that be allowed? Would they still be able to do that at the end of the bill?
So we are talking about that specific thing, and it's been raised by a few colleagues. For restaurants that decide to move from the tipping regime we have to a tip that is that they're going to offer that goes directly to the workers, I think we're working on language to allow that to happen as long as it's disclosed. What I will say is I have heard actually from servers that this 4% wellness fee or service charge is actually confusing and leads to lower tips because people think that that's actually a service charge, right, that may be going for gratuity. And so in addition to be deceiving to customers, I also think it is it's harmful to those workers and those service workers who rely on tips. Other questions?
Senator Bolden? I know this thing was just trying to be as brief as possible, but will you still ban the sale of medical debt to collectors? That was, I thought, in the works.
We're having conversations about that. I believe Senator Marty has a standalone bill for that, and we are in conversation with him. It isn't spelled out specifically in this bill, but conversations are ongoing.
With regards to the right to repair, specifically for agriculture, I know obviously last session there was some right to repair passed, but agriculture was exempted from that, and I know some farm groups have opposed this. Why do this now, and why was this exempted in the past, and do you expect to kind of face that same opposition?
So I'll correct you and say that some farm groups oppose this. There are many farm groups that support this. Mainly the grassroots member-based groups are really behind this, and the right to repair really came out of farmers and ranchers feeling like their hands were tied when they spend enormous amounts of money on a piece of equipment. They're not used to not being able to fix it. We're not talking about modifications. We're talking about simple fixes to just operate your machine. What we have seen in different states and kind of this patchwork across the country, Colorado has kind of the gold standard for a statewide policy because we haven't seen action at the federal level yet. We see that this is a grassroots movement that is coming from farmers. And absolutely, there are groups who maybe have quite a bit of market share and quite a bit of power who are against this, and that's to be expected.
Can I clarify something about that, please?
Please.
So let's get on to why some farm groups aren't in favor of this change. Well, I believe really most are, as was accurately stated. The reason why is because their argument is that there was some sort of a voluntary agreement in place already, and that's why you don't need it. I think the argument is if you already voluntarily agreed, why not just put it in statute? So it's not like we're against it on principle. No, there's acknowledging that they do recognize that there needs to be a way for farmers to access the codes and to take their products to get fixed wherever they want to, but they say there's an agreement in place so we don't need this. Well, if there's an agreement in place already, let's just make a statute so that it works for everybody and we don't have to come back and do an honor system.
They won't honor the warranty if you try to fix your own equipment? Is that what's going on?
We have specific language around that. We want to make sure that there's language protecting, and we're waiting for the bill jackets. So I'm hoping that will come very, very soon, but we've been working on this. And the hope is to have language to really clarify that, yes, if you're going to do a modification to your machinery, then that exempts you from the warranty. But that is not what we're talking about. So we're trying to make it very clear in the bill that this is about being able to pair a piece of equipment, like you pair your headphones to your device to be able to hear, and that you're able to just, you know, see what that code is and fix it.
Access to the code.
Mm-hmm.
What do you do about the people that will say some of these agribusinesses are too big to fail, pandemic?
I think if your business is too big to fail, maybe your business is too big to exist. And let me tell you, we've been here before. There were folks who said, you know what, I'm going to own all of the oil, or I'm going to own all of the railroads, or I'm going to own all of the steel. And our great-grandparents said, no, you're not. And the sky didn't fall, and in fact, we saw a birth of economic vibrancy in our economy. Everything we're talking about is actually pro-competition. It's actually kind of conservative. But we're here saying, let's have more competition. And I'm going to tell you right now, a lot of the times when we have these prices that are stuck, particularly pharmaceuticals, it's because of an absence of transparency and competition. It's because of abuse of patents. It's because folks in the market use their competitive advantage to exclude and to price gouge and to hold consumers in a position of control.
You just raised the issue of pharmaceuticals. If this becomes law, then is this a platform for you to do more to control pharmaceutical prices?
Look, if a pharmaceutical company tries to engage in unfair competition, again, if they use their power to control prices or exclude competition, a firm has monopoly power if the firm is able to profitably raise prices substantially above the competitive level for a significant period of time. The firm also has monopoly power if the firm can exclude competitors. If they do that, I don't care what kind of business they are, we're going to have a conversation.
Sorry, we have time for one more question. Our senators have to get the floor. Okay. For Minnesota's antitrust penalties and the proposed increase there, is that something that's on par with where other states are, or is Minnesota kind of trying to go, you know, maybe be a leader in this area for other states? How does that compare nationwide?
We're trying to catch up. We're trying to get where folks are should be and supposed to be. These penalties of this 1971 Act have not been indexed. We're talking about 1971 money. We're just trying to make it up to date. So thank you for the question.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.